threshold, but you know. Let's move the proponents for the eligibility of county business now.
And I would like to distribute these responses that I filed just this afternoon in response to the objection. My name is Joseph Blaisbrook, and I represent Tony Bisignano in this matter. Madam Moderator, the Secretary and General Milner's privilege to appear before this panel. And of course, we would ask this panel to overrule the objection lodged by Mr. Giacometto and allow Mr. Bisignano to maintain and the argument set forth by what I refer to in my document here as the complainant, which the arguments are based on a combination of constitutional and statutory interpretation, which all basically revolve around the definition of infamous crime. As Mr. Dickey stated in his statement, the Iowa Supreme Court did have occasion to define infamous crime, and of course at that time in 1957 in the Halbrook case, they defined infamous crime as a crime punishable by incarceration in a penitentiary. That decision was made in isolation of modern statutes concerning incarceration and punishment. Certainly, the aggravated misdemeanor did not exist at that time. I'm not even sure that the OWI second, as such, existed at that time. It certainly did not exist at the time of the Flanagan opinion, which is the one that actually analyzed infamous crime. The Halbrook decision merely reaffirmed that definition in 1957. And of course, as you pointed out, General Miller, recent legislative changes call into further question that understanding of infamous crime based upon legislative definition. And so for all of these reasons, and for some of the reasons that you stated in your questions, it's just inappropriate for this panel and for any court to maintain, and our position is that aggravated misdemeanors generally are not infamous crimes, and certainly not in OWI second. And I laid this out in my response here. First of all, as a matter of constitutional law, regardless of any statutory provision, infamous crime, as defined in the Halbrook opinion, was a little bit short-sighted because they didn't have to consider this quirk in Iowa law, which is the aggravated misdemeanor. They only had to decide whether felons were infamous criminals and whether misdemeanors were not. And that's what they did. They drew a line, a very practical, straightforward line between misdemeanors and felonies, and that was easy enough. Historically, however, under common law, an infamous crime was not just a felony, but it also included treason, as well as offenses known as crimen falsi, which is Latin for offenses involving dishonesty. So things like perjury or fraud would be considered infamous crimes as well. There's a lot of authority for this. I do cite Black's Law Dictionary. I cite a West Legal Encyclopedia. Unfortunately, given the very short timelines we've had in this case, I wasn't able to do more extensive research. But I think you'll find that a extensive review of infamous crimes language in the common law will reveal that the understanding of infamous crimes at the time of the framing of the Iowa Constitution is different than what is being asserted that an aggravated misdemeanor would qualify. So for the reasons I've stated in my my brief here, a constitutional definition of infamous crime cannot include aggravated misdemeanor. And then on top of that, we have the statutory argument. And the statutory argument is, first and foremost, an interpretation of Iowa Code Section 39.3. which of course defines infamous crime as either a felony under state law or an offense classified as a felony under federal law. And I would grant Mr. Dickey that that language is a little bit unclear because it could be viewed as an offense, a state offense, which for federal purposes would be considered a felony for federal sentencing or whatever, or it could be viewed as a federal felony. And the legislature did not make that 100% clear. However, I would point out that since the rights of thousands of Iowans to vote is at stake here, a definition that would take away that right should err on the side of the voter. And thus, the only reasonable interpretation of Iowa Code Section 39.3 sub 8
is that a person convicted of a federal offense, which is classified as a felony, as well as a state offense classified as a felony, would be convicted of an infamous crime. That's the only reasonable interpretation. Even if, however, either this panel or the Supreme Court were to interpret the statutory definition of infamous crime to include state offenses classified as a felony for federal purposes, that statutory definition, for the same reasons that Mr. Dickey stated, would be subject to constitutional review because, as Mr. Dickey stated, the legislature does not have the sole power to necessarily define an infamous crime, at least insofar as it would modify the constitutional definition of infamous crime. And as I stated, the constitutional definition of infamous crime absolutely does not include an aggravated misdemeanor and absolutely does not include OWI second offense. But we have to be clear that the legislature does play some role. Mr. Dickey argues that the legislature doesn't affect the constitutional definition of infamous crime at all, but that's simply not the case. The legislature does that all the time. And what I mean by that is the legislature passes new felonies all the time, and they pass new misdemeanors. And, of course, that affects the conversation about what's an infamous crime because we're creating new infamous crimes every time we create a new felony. So the legislature does have a role to play, and I believe that the most reasonable interpretation of what is a rather complex and sometimes difficult to reconcile set of statutes is that the legislature meant to characterize felonies as infamous crimes, but did not mean to characterize aggravated misdemeanors as infamous crimes. And just going back briefly to the constitutional argument, if you read the common law defining infamous crimes, you find a lot of very colorful adjectives. You find words like reprehensible, deep, dark, devious, words like that to describe these infamous crimes. Crimes which would subject one to the legal definition of infamy, which means being publicly branded a person who could not be relied on even as a witness in a hearing. Now, Mr. Chido has never asserted that Mr. Bisignano shouldn't be allowed to testify as a witness, even though that's the common law definition of infamous crime. So I think there is a disconnect between Mr. Chido's arguments and the constitutional definition of infamous crime. But finally, I would also point out, and this is a lot to do with the Attorney General opinion that was issued in 1985, OWI second offense is a particular type of aggravated misdemeanor in this state, which sets forth a slightly different sentencing scheme than the typical aggravated misdemeanor. So even if this panel or a court were to determine that an aggravated misdemeanor was an infamous crime, an OWI second offense requires a sentence which is punishable by all of the following. And then it goes on to say, a minimum period of imprisonment in the county jail or a community-based correctional facility of 7 days, but not to exceed 2 years. So, yes, there's language that says up to 2 years, but there's also language that says jail or a community-based correctional facility. Now, that, of course, creates an issue about what about the 16 people that are serving time in an actual prison. And that is an interesting and complex issue, and I'm not sure how the courts would resolve a challenge along those lines. But the clear language of the statute itself requires confinement in a jail or community-based correctional facility. And so even if this panel were to believe that an aggravated misdemeanor was an infamous crime, an OWI second would be exempted from that based upon the plain language of the OWI second statute. So I guess just as I wrap up here, I would just call to the panel's attention several practical consequences of the decision that you're making here today. As you've noted, members of the panel, you've noted this effect it's going to have on aggravated misdemeanor offenders who might seek to vote in the future. There are thousands of people whose right to vote is at stake because of one man's arguments that my client shouldn't be allowed to participate in this election. Second, at the time of sentencing, as Mr. Dickey well knows, a criminal defendant must be advised of the fundamental rights which he's giving up by pleading guilty. And when he is not advised of those rights, he can file a post-conviction relief action accusing his attorney of committing ineffective assistance of counsel. We saw this in the Padilla versus Kentucky case, for example, where counsel was held ineffective for not advising his client who was pleading guilty to an offense that the offense would subject that individual to immigration consequences. Here, we have thousands of people in the state of Iowa who have pled guilty to aggravated misdemeanors who were not advised that by pleading guilty to the aggravated misdemeanor, they would be potentially giving up their right to vote. So as a practical consequence of Mr. Dickey's argument, he would be creating a situation where perhaps 30,000 people could come and file a post-conviction relief and try to get their aggravated misdemeanor undone. Clearly, the established pattern and practice of the executive branch of the state, as well as the pattern and established law of the legislature, requires this panel to do exactly what you indicated in your questions, which was to affirm this practice and to continue to regard people convicted of an aggravated misdemeanor as somebody who is not convicted of an infamous crime. So for those reasons, we would respectfully ask this panel to overrule the objection raised by Mr. Chido and allow Mr. Bisignano to proceed with his candidacy.
You obviously covered this during your remarks, but it's pretty central. Let's go back to it and just give me your response. That the thrust of the argument by Mr. Dickey that there's a constitutional case that says that if you are in jeopardy of going to prison, you lose your right to vote, and that we in the legislature have to follow that constitutional case. How do you respond?
Well, I don't think the Halbrook case is clear on that point. I mean, first of all, the Halbrook case was interpreting the Flanagan case, which was the 1916 case.
The 1916 case is really what I refer to. Does that have
sure. Knowledge? Very well. I would just point out, first of all, that the Flanagan case has been subject to a lot of change, and I would point out that the constitutional definition of the word infamous crime has also changed. At the time of Blackstone, for example, infamous crime included things like sodomy, which, of course, is now a federally protected right. So we can't have a static definition of infamous crime per se, at least from a constitutional point of view. We have to have a standard that recognizes society's changes in what they consider to be infamous. And as society changed in this state, we adopted legislation that recognized those changes, and we adopted the aggravated misdemeanor. And so the law in Flanagan, which again was analyzing a Massachusetts opinion, which is, of course, not controlling law, was simply creating a black and white, easy to follow standard between felonies and misdemeanors. And as our society has advanced or changed, that definition is in serious question. In addition to the changing conception of infamous crime, we also have this consideration that wasn't on the table back then, which is the 1978 adoption of the aggravated misdemeanor.
How would you address Mr. Chido's argument that an offense classified as a felony under federal law and federal guidelines, that this should be classified that way? How do you address that?
Sure. Well, and of course, this is the definition in Iowa Code Section 39.3 sub 8 that we're talking about. That particular statute has not been analyzed by any appellate court, so it's an issue of first impression. The language of the statute says a felony as so labeled under Iowa law, and then it has this language which is that an offense which is classified as a felony under federal law. And again, I would agree that, their argument is conceivable. But I think the much more straightforward way to analyze the phrase an offense classified as a felony under federal law is to simply, our position is that simply means for a federal felony, an offense that's a federal offense, which is a felony. So if the legislature wanted to make state offenses which are classified for federal sentencing purposes felonies, the legislature could have said a state offense classified as a felony under federal law. But they didn't do that. They said an offense classified as a felony under federal law. And I think a reasonable and plain interpretation of that statute would be a federal felony.
Can you have a federal misdemeanor?
Yes.
When you look at the your last argument, are you stating that because the statute says imprisonment in county jail or community-based correctional facility, that therefore it cannot be applied the way Mr. Dickey is applying it?
I wouldn't go that far. I'm certainly alluding to that possibility, and I'm just looking at the statutory language. Obviously, as Mr. Dickey has pointed out, there are people.
Order.
The House Bill 1 by Education Bill to State
Obviously, Mr. Dickey has presented evidence that some folks are serving prison for OWI second. So I think there's, as I mentioned, there's an interesting issue there as to whether those sentences are consistent with the language of the statute. I don't want to open a can of worms in that regard. And this panel certainly doesn't.
There's a lot of can of worms.
I understand that. This panel doesn't have to decide that question. This panel.
There's a very small number of people
there. Yeah, 16 people, it sounds like, or whatever, currently serving. So it's an interesting question. I don't think it's. I think there were some unpublished Court of Appeals cases deciding that issue in Mr. Dickey's favor, but those are not binding authority on this panel. So.
OWI, the only thing that they are incarcerated for is individuals, or do they have other crimes with the OWI?
Yeah, my understanding from Mr. Dickey is that those 16 are the isolated cases of only OWI second,
yeah.
And there's a bunch of others who have a combination.
The numbers I saw were 15